Gotcha. Welcome to the Village Oak Tree for September 11th. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and thank you for joining me once again. Today, my guest is Danielle Orsino, an award-winning fantasy novel author of the World of Fae series. So let me bring her up and let her tell us a little bit about her work, a little bit about herself, and my particular question, just a little bit more about this cosplay stuff. So with that, let me bring up Ms. Danielle Orsino. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. So that's kind of where I want to lead off with is, you know, tell us about what you do. I mean, we want to know about your books, but the other stuff too.
Well, I am an author. I'm an author of the Birth of the Fae series. It's been around for a couple of years, but I am re-releasing it right now with a whole new set of edits and all the deleted scenes that I always wanted to add, but wasn't allowed to. It is also going into audiobook as we speak. Two of the books, Locked Out of Heaven and Nine Eyes of Mercy, are currently available on audio. But aside from that, I am a martial artist. I've been on Team USA for the WKA. I competed in the World Championships a couple of years ago and won the silver medal. And then I'm a dog mom to two lovely puppies, Carlos and Penelope. Big New York Giants fan. I bleed blue. Go Giants. Don't know what's going to happen this season. But, you know, keep hope alive on that set. And then, yes, I'm a cosplayer on top of it all. So anything else you'd like to know, I'm an open book, so to speak.
Well, you know what? That pretty much is a pretty good base to start with, I'd say. I wrote a book last year, but I wouldn't exactly call it a fantasy. Given the way the United States is going these days, it might turn into a reality here in about 10 years. that's a whole nother thing. So tell us some more about your books.
My books are an origin of the Fae. Anybody who knows fairies, mermaids, dryads, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I do, is I give them an origin story, because when I read a lot of these type of books, it was just that these ethereal creatures just existed. There was never a reason for them being here. It was always just they were here. Mm-hmm. So my books actually give the origin story of them. In my case, they were angels that were locked out of heaven after the war with Lucifer. They just could not go home. They don't know why. And they become the polytheistic gods and goddesses throughout human history. They are the Roman gods and goddesses, Egyptian, you name it, they are it. And they receive human worship, and that gives them power, but they are called the Fae. In my case, Fae is an acronym for the Fellowship Aegis of Earth, the defenders of Earth. They defend nature, the flora, fauna, you name it, that's what they do. And they kind of play in the shadows of humanity. They have deals with the European royalty throughout history, up to the CIA, you know, which is volume 2, Birth of a Succubus, coming out in 2025. So this faction has kind of played and maybe altered certain things. So there's a lot of alternative history. And I kind of just played in the sense of this idea of these creatures trying to survive and find a new identity, which I think we can all kind of relate to. You know, we've lost a job and that's been our whole identity. And then all of a sudden we don't have it. What do we do? And in this case, that's what happened with these angels. I have the virtue angels who were sent here to get the planet ready. So they're nature. And then I have the power brigade, who were the actual foot soldiers of the archangels. So they're two different sets and they don't have jobs anymore. So they have to find their own identities, and that follows them throughout history.
Huh, that sounds pretty interesting. I'll have to go check that out, because I mean, I've been an avid science fiction reader, or fantasy reader, since I was a little kid, and that's saying a lot. You know, I grew up in the days of Isaac Asimov and all the other greats from the 50s and 60s, and kind of went through the years through that. But yeah, that's pretty interesting. I'm gonna have to go check that out.
Yeah, it's on audiobook, which was big for me to do an audiobook. It's by Skyboat Media, and I have two narrators, which I really love. I have a male and a female, which I think is adds a little something to the book. But in my case, I did a lot of research on dragons, because I hated when you read about dragons, fire breathers, and it's just like, oh, they breathe fire, that's it. So I worked with my vet, Dr. Gil Stanzione, and then I worked with a physics professor a mechanical engineer professor, and we made sure the dragons could actually do what I say they can do. So I built their digestive systems first to give them their oral defenses. So they're bacteria based. And then we went for flight and things like that. So they're not the size of 747s. They're smaller. You know, I don't want to get busted for anything. I kind of joke that if I was on Mythbusters, I'd be plausible, not confirmed, but plausible. So we did a lot of work, and I added that sci-fi element in the sense of doing the research. Mm-hmm. I was a nurse before, so I added like more physiology and anatomy to really figure out the dragons, because I wanted to give it that feel of reality. So we really worked on that. And that's where I pulled in a lot of the sci-fi people who were like, okay, I get it. They're, you know, they're actual dragons. And then I worked with a great illustrator, Pandy Van, to bring them to life.
Well, that's pretty good. Yeah, I don't have such lofty ideals as far as that goes. I wrote the book. You know, I had a friend of mine out in Arizona. You know, she's a retired editor. So I let her do the editing for me. And then, you know, it took several months running back and forth with that. Then I went and, you know, somebody said, well, you know, if you want to make this go, you've got to get a really good book cover going. So I'm like, okay. So I got a hold of somebody at Readsy, and she lives up in upstate New York. And we've worked well together the last few months, you know, since last year. So that in itself is a going thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a prolific writer as far as it goes. I wrote one book. I intend to write more, but it's like finding time to get it done.
But you wrote one. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then now I'm right in the middle of another book, which has nothing to do with the series I started last year, only because I have a friend in England who said, you know, you should really write stories about your military history. I'm like, well, I'm not going to give out a lot of details about what I did in my career in the military, simply because some of that stuff is still classified. But the other part of it is that I'm not comfortable talking about myself that much. So then I got the idea of taking some of my stories and making them fictional ones based on some of the exploits that I did through the years. And that seems to be working pretty good. Now I just got to sit down and finish it.
That sounds like a great idea, but yeah, now you got to finish it. But still, you have it on paper. You can't edit what's not on paper. Right. So now that you've got it going, you're one step ahead.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the idea, is once I get it finished the way I want it to, you know, I'll see if I can find somebody that can edit it for me. So that's, you know, it's one of the things I tell people. It's like, you know, English was not my first language. So I struggled with English grammar all throughout primary school. And
English is my first language, and I struggle. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But that's all right. I mean, it's all good. I have a friend of mine in Florida who keeps telling me the same thing you just said. Hey, don't worry about it. There's a lot of people out there worse than you. I'm like, well, you know, in my book, I don't see that possible.
That's why you pay an editor. Don't worry about it. As long as you get a good editor, you're fine.
Right. Yeah. I think that's how that's going to go. Yeah. And then, you know, that's another part of my grammar, if you want it, is I have a tendency to speak military speak. So a lot of my acronyms and terminologies don't sit well with the civilian world. And that's, you know, I had somebody tell me that a couple of years ago. She said, when you write this stuff, you write it like a soldier. You can't do that because nobody's going to understand you. I'm like, okay.
But it adds some realism.
Well, yeah. So that's was the thing. Finding that balance.
Yes.
You know, when you write a story like that, you got to find the balance. So I kind of took some clues from writers who do write military type stuff. And I thought, you know, I've read some of their books. So I kind of took some cues from them guys. Again, yeah, it's, you know, I'll get the draft out, and then we'll go from there. You know, see how it works out.
We're on the road. That's what you got to do.
So tell me about this blasphemy list that you put in your thing. I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm on two blasphemy lists. I haven't made a third yet, but here's hoping. Unfortunately, when I wrote the first edition of Locked Out of Heaven, it was put in Christian spirituality for some reason. It just got hit the wrong button on Amazon. And so I asked for it to be changed. They would not. They just kept putting it back in there. And so people took the book the wrong way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They kept thinking it was going to be some spiritual journey. Obviously, it's not. So even when it did get moved and people started reading it for fantasy, they were still very offended by it because I was taking angels and making them fey. And I was using some, how can I put this, biblical events and making them fey events. So humans interpreted them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so one sea that was parted was actually a fey battle that the humans came across. So the humans saw it one way. It was actually something that was happening with the fey. And some people did not like that. Once again, it's a fantasy book. I'm not saying this is what went down. It did not matter.
Right.
So people felt it was blasphemous. And so this got me in some trouble with some Christian ethic groups.
I'll bet.
And felt, you know, I had gone too far. And so they put me on some lists. And then another group was trying to petition the Vatican to pull the book. It
wow.
never got that far. You know, they were trying to put a video up. YouTube stopped them. I think the video up was, like I said, for all of 30 seconds before YouTube stepped in.
Right.
It was like, no. But every now and then, this whole problem resurfaces and I've gotten death threats. I've gotten people asking me for my home address because they want to send me pamphlets to get my relationship with God better. And now I just turn around and tell them, Lucifer has not told me what realm of hell we will be living in once we're married. As soon as he does, I will totally let you know, but we're registered at Bed Bath & Beyond. Please send towels. You know, I just kind of make a joke of it now because it's just gotten to that point where I'm like, it's a fantasy novel, guys. Like, I never said this is what happened. But now I joke to them and I'm like, you're still on book one. Wait till you get to book four. Then I really let everybody have it. Because I'm an equal opportunity offender now. It was a joke. Not a joke, but this is what I took from it. I did a lot of research. There were actually virtue angels. There was obviously never a Power Brigade angel. I made that up. But I did do research and people really did not like that I actually did the research. I thought that would have calmed everybody down. Like, hey, you know, that made it worse for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why. They really didn't like that. And so, yeah, I've had groups called like the Guns of God actually take a picture of a gun. And I don't know. So if you're a member of the Guns of God and you're like, hey, we didn't do that. Someone else did it. I'm sorry. But, you know, take a picture of it with a date underneath it. And I've had to report it to Instagram. And be like, hey, this is crossing a line. Like, you can say I'm this or I'm a heretic and all this stuff. I don't mind. But, like, once you start saying you're going to do something, I'm like, I've had people outside my home, you know, following me, taking pictures. And, you know, some of them have had, like, they've actually had their group on their car. So I know who they are. And they've tailed me. And I'm like, look. I'm just going to say that's not the smartest thing to do, but you know, I kind of joke with them and I say, okay, if you're this group and you believe in the Bible and everything, and once again, I'm not saying I don't or do, I don't think God is sitting up on a cloud golf clapping going, yeah, you go get that little redheaded author, guys. Good job. I think that's kind of against everything he's teaching. I don't think he's worried about me. I think there's other things in the world.
Right.
I don't think, you know, harassing me is part of the Ten Commandments and the teaching. I'm just going to say that. So I just, at this point, it just has to go in one ear out the other.
Right.
Because that's not what I wrote it for. You know, it's just a fantasy book.
The worst part is that now you got to look over your shoulder, and that's pretty sad.
That does get you get into a state of paranoia. And I was in that state originally. When this whole thing started, I was beside myself. I was crying. I was apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seemed like every little thing I said was wrong. So I just stopped apologizing because I couldn't make it better.
Right.
And I thought about pulling the book. I had done all that.
Huh.
But then I just backed up and I was like, I didn't do anything wrong because it didn't come from malicious intent.
Right.
It was came from a good place in my heart. So I just backed off and I was like, I'm not going to apologize for my creativity. If you don't like it, don't read it. It's really that simple. If you're picking up the book to read it just to find something wrong with it, you got to look at yourself.
Yeah.
And that's how I just looked at it. And I just stepped back. And now, you know, I know another cycle will come back up. Like, I always know when it's coming. I can kind of, and then I'm like, okay, here we go again. And then I waited out. And I kind of laugh now because as I wrote the books, I named them, you know, and I titled them. I never realized till I got to the last three that it's really the end of the Lord's Prayer. Hmm. And I'm like, kingdom come, a fay is done, forgive us. I'm like, the kingdom come, thy will be done, forgive us our trouble. I'm like, oh, and I kind of laugh and I'm like, have you guys figured that part out? Because you can yell at me for that. I'm like, you're still on book one. I'm like, read the titles. And I just laugh at them because I'm like, you haven't gotten that far yet? I'm like, okay, you're still hung up on that. We still got a ways to go. I'm going to be on this list for a while. So I'm like, it's okay.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I kind of concerned myself with the book I wrote because I'm not a Christian and I don't hide that at all. But it's just the idea that when I wrote the book, my main character is a practicing Muslim and he hooks up with this Wiccan woman from upstate New York and it turns into a bit of a romance throughout the book. And at the end they get married, you know? And yeah, it's a fantasy, it's fiction, but would the Christians get offended by that? Oh, well, I was more worried about the extreme Muslims than I was the Christians. You know, they might get a little upset about something like that.
It's scary when you have to think about that. But I look at it now, I was raised Catholic. My father is very Catholic. You know, they're practicing. I just look at it as there was no malicious intent.
Right.
So however you take it, you take it. If you're going to get upset about a fantasy book with everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. You got other problems.
So I just move on from it.
Right. And that's the way I looked at it too. I mean, I haven't gotten any feedback, but then I haven't had that many people read it. You know, and so, you know, I'll take it for what it's worth. But still, it's too bad that folks who want to do the right thing and just write a book for people to enjoy got to endure all this silly stuff.
There's a certain amount of censorship and cancel culture that I think has taken over creativity where you have to be so careful of what you're doing because everybody can get offended. And you just have to stop and say, it's still, you're just creating. If you're not, I'm not spreading hate in my case. And there's a lot of people out there that are not spreading hate, but are still concerned about this. And I think that's when you kind of have to step back and say, at what point have we gone too far? There's an extreme on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, where you go too crazy with speaking your mind and then you go too crazy with keeping your mouth shut. You got to find the middle.
Yeah, that's exactly. Finding a balance. And I'm all about balance in this world. There's not enough of it as it is.
Correct.
You know, and so I'm kind of like, you know, so let's kind of move on into cosplay. So tell us about this. I mean, first of all, for those of us who don't know, even know what it is, what is it?
Cosplay is, as I define it, an expression of your fandom. So, for example, if you're a Wonder Woman fan, I am, I may dress as the Linda Carter version, you know, from the television show, or I may mix it up and do a Victorian version of Wonder Woman, where maybe I have a bustled skirt, I have more of a Victorian style corset, I might wear my hair like that. It's all how you express your fandom for a character or for a genre. And you do it your way. Whether you make it, a lot of us do make certain parts of it. We may not make the whole costume, but we usually do make certain parts. Or you buy it, it's totally fine. It's just expressing your fandom love. And then you go to cons or you go to meetups, you know, maybe you LARP, whatever it is. And you just kind of have your fun with it. And that's really what it is. It's freedom of expression in that genre.
So that explains my son's kind of, I don't know what fanaticism, I guess. It's not, I guess that's a bit of a strong word. I get to understand now, my son is in his mid-40s. Mm-hmm. So he grew up when Star Wars first came out.
Right.
And of course, me being a career military, I was deployed a lot. So mom bought him all these Star Wars toys for him and his little brother. And he never got past that in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, his house is full of Star Wars memorabilia and all kinds of things like that. So, you know, where he lives, I visited him a couple of times and he's out working in his garage. And the first time I asked him, I said, "What are you working on?" He says, "I'm making this Star Wars costume for a cosplay." I'm like, "What is that?" He tried to explain it to me and I'm like, "Okay." And it kind of went right over my head. And then I noticed my granddaughter was getting into it, you know, on her thing. She's not into Star Wars, but still they're both into this cosplay stuff. And I thought, okay, and I'll let it go. I mean, obviously it's just hobby and I'm not going to say anything one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But then when you mentioned it, I thought, well, maybe it's not just him. So apparently this is fairly popular.
Oh, it's a huge community. You know, you won't just see them at cons. Obviously, Comic Cons, Galaxy Con, it's a big thing. We're all walking around. You know, we've met celebrities in our outfits. We meet each other, but it is a community. And I think it's a very, there's a lot that's very accepting. When I go, I know when I personally go to New York Comic Con, which was the first time I ever went cosplay to a big function. Mm-hmm. The thing that struck me about New York Comic Con was the fact that it is so accepting. It doesn't matter who you are, if it's your first time cosplaying, your 50th time cosplaying, that community is so accepting. They go out of their way when they see somebody, and you know when it's their first time. You always know when it's a first time cosplayer coming out. Uh-huh. They're usually very shy. They're kind of walking around. There's certain, like, they're looking around. You can tell the shoulders are up and they're kind of looking side to side. You can always tell when it's somebody's first time. And a lot of times you do have men or women, you know, cross-dressing. In some respect, I know, you know, maybe that's not the right term, and I'm sorry, guys, but it's their first time going out, maybe in drag or something, and somebody always goes out of their way to say something nice to them, and that's what I found so amazing. I remember there was this one gentleman who you knew it was his first time. You could totally tell. He was in a Wonder Woman outfit. You knew, and even the girl who was with him kept telling him, like, "You're doing great. This is awesome," like, pepping him up, and I just kept seeing people going up to him, one after another, going, "Your hair looks awesome. Bracelets look great," just saying one thing. And each time you just, so I'm kind of taking a breath and just getting like a little more confidence to walk. And I was like, you see, that's what you want. You just want a place of acceptance. Huh. And it doesn't matter body type. None of it matters. Right. Everybody's there just to have a good time and to express themselves freely. And that even goes for professionals. I always tell this story that when I was there one year, there was a guy dressed up as Plastic Man. And for those of you in the 70s, you probably remember early 80s Plastic Man. He wore a red leotard. He's got these white kind of goggles. And this guy looked just like him. I mean, and everybody was running up to take pictures. So I went to talk to him. He was an orthopedic surgeon. And he said, "I saved my days up. I come to Comic-Con. I spend the whole time here." He's like, "I get to act like an idiot." He's like, "And this is my stress release. He's like, I'm not on call, nothing." He's like, "Because you don't want somebody goofy coming in to cut you up." Mm-hmm. He's like, "So this is what I do here." He's like, "I can do this here. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon here." He's like, "I'm Plastic Man. So this is what I do." He's like, "I spend money and make the costume look better every year." He's like, and he knows all the he knows everything. Huh. And he's a superstar when he's there.
Wow.
That's his stress relief. And he's like, "I can't do this anywhere else." He's like, "If I go on vacation, somebody finds out I'm a doctor, it's like, oh, I got this ache here. Oh, my elbow." He's like, "Here, nobody asks me what I do." He's like, "You're the first person." He's like, "This is what I do."
Huh.
And I get it.
So it kind of explains my son then a little bit. He's a teacher. And that's a stressful job. Mm-hmm. So I guess for him, it's also stress relief. I forget exactly which Star Wars character he dresses up at. I just know that he was, you know, putting this costume together out there in the garage, and just going to town. When he was growing up, I taught him how to do some small carpentry kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so he was using that kind of creativity, I guess, if you want to call it that, and putting this thing together. And I'm like, Okay, you know, hey, that's what you want to do, go for it. I'm glad you're having
fun.
There's
a lot of creativity that goes into it. I know I make a lot of my own props. I've made my Harley mallet, my Wonder Woman shield, her sword. I like making the props. That's my thing. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, Mark Handel, who does Doctor Doom. He's a phenomenal Doctor Doom. Huh. He puts so much work into it. His mask is, he could walk on the set tomorrow and tap Robert Downey Jr. on the shoulder and say, I'm going to step in for you. And I think Marvel would go, yeah, sure. His costume is that.
Wow.
Good. I mean, it's like perfect. Huh. He wore, but that's his stress relief as well. That's what he does on the side. I get it. And that's what a lot of these guys do. It's just a sense of stress relief. It's creativity. It's little things they've learned throughout the years. They want to try painting, whatever it is. So I think for a lot of people who cosplay, besides being stress relief, it's a creative outlet on something that they can't do every day. You know, some of them don't want to paint on an easel. Okay. But they like airbrushing. So this is something different they do, mm-hmm. you know, sewing, whatever it is, molding, acrylics. And sometimes it's cool to just figure out a problem. It's problem solving. Yeah. Like you can't, a lot of this stuff, you have to make the mold or you have to find a way around. You know, nobody's walking around with an Iron Man suit. So you got to go make it. You know, you can't go buy that. So they're like, okay, how do I do this? I could go get this, or I could, you know, you got to figure it out. I did it when I made the armor for one of my covers. I used to be on the covers on the second edition of the books. I did the cover. So I had to make the costumes. Hmm. Well, one of my main characters, Jarvok, has shoulder pauldrons and they all have skulls. And I'm like, how do I make these half skulls that will fit? I got ice cube trays and poured resin into them. I found silicone ice cube trays, poured the resin, shaved it off, did whatever, and I was able to make his skulls. For some people, it's a problem-solving thing, and they love it.
Yeah. Well, that might explain a little bit why he does it, too. Yeah. You know, I know that's interesting. It's interesting. So, you know, you talked about your book covers, and, there was a mention about you being on some of your book covers. So tell us a little bit about that.
For my second edition book covers, I was on them. My publisher at the time, I'm no longer with them, but when I was with them, they had made the executive decision after seeing some of my cosplay, because I did cosplay as some of the characters initially, because I was trying to get a feel for them. And some of them were for a magazine. They saw the pictures and they said, what are you doing with the rest of these? Do you own them? I said, yeah, I do. And they had said, give us 24 hours. We're going to get back to you on the cover ideas. And they came back, and the first cover of Locked Out of Heaven, they had mocked up with myself as Serena the Mermaid from one of my shoots. And they put it on the cover, and they had made that decision at that point. They were like, this is what your covers are going to be. We're going to put you on them in cosplay. So from that point on, for the six books, I was on the cover. One cover, Kingdom Come, I was with Jarvok. I had a friend who posed as Jarvok. We made everything. His whole armor was made. Everything on the covers was made. We did some, it's all cosplay, and we did it.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it very much. We had a great time with it. But for the third edition, I have a wonderful cover artist, Rux from Methus Art, who is doing my covers, and their typeset and these beautiful symbology kind of things, is symbolic designs, which I really love. But being on the covers was a lot of fun. It was nerve wracking.
Yeah.
Because you're being judged for the cover and what's inside, and it's both you. It's a little rough, but it was a lot of fun and I enjoyed it.
Huh. I mean, that's interesting. I know I went through quite a bit trying to make, try to get the right feeling for the book. I mean, you obviously, when you want to put a book cover to get people's attention, it also has to have something to do with what's between the covers, you know, what people are going to be reading. So that's one of the things that I struggle with, was finding just the right kind of theme to put on the book cover, make it look attractive so people want to pick it up off the shelf, and kind of go from there. I mean, yeah, I can see how you might struggle with that a little bit, trying to get the right theme, I guess, for what the book is about.
I always had my view. The publisher obviously had their view. We didn't always agree. The only one we agreed on who would go on the covers. We knew which characters would go on, but we always picked different pictures. I always picked a different image than they did, and we would kind of go back and forth
right.
on it. I know I wanted, on book six, I wanted a very different image, and it was still, it was never quite, we were, both of us were never quite happy. It was always like, oh, I want this, but they want that. Huh. So it was always a struggle in that sense, because as the author, you know what you want to convey. You have right. a very specific theme and emotion in mind. As the publisher, they're like, but this is what's commercial. This is what'll catch their eye. And you think it's something different. There's always that back and forth. So
all right. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you, it sounds like you had some struggles with publishers.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us a little bit about yeah, that. Because to be honest with you,
yeah.
when I was getting ready to, you know, put this book out last year,
mm-hmm.
I researched going, you know, trying to sell it to a publishing house versus publishing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a couple of people, and these were professional people. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically told me, well, you know, you can go either way, but these days, because of publishing houses being the way they are, if you really, really want this book to reflect what you want as an author, publish it yourself. And I'm like,
100%.
Okay. Then I started doing some more homework and found out that, you know, there are some issues. There's upsides and downsides no matter which way you go. But mm-hmm. self-publishing yeah. seems to be, if you can mm-hmm. do it right, yes. seems to be the way to go these days, simply because publishing houses are so fickle. So tell us about your struggles.
I've been through two publishers, traditional. Okay. I did get an offer from the big three in between. My first offer was from one of the big three. But nowadays you do not get a series offer. Nobody offers you a series. Even if right. you have a series, it does not matter. They get the first right of refusal. There's no advance anymore.
Yeah.
That's gone. That's been gone for a long time. The only marketing you get is within the first 30 days. And if you don't do well after that, your marketing's gone. It's mm-hmm. up to you. It's still up to you even in the first 30 days. They have say in everything. I did not take the first offer. I also had to wait a year because it was under a metaphysical imprint and there was a lot to it. I did not take it. During that time, I was also applying to physician assistant school. I was getting in. And if the book had come out during the 2 years, I would have broken the employment contract. And I would have been fined $20,000 and kicked out of school. So I didn't go for it. I wound up not going to PA school subsequently anyway. The first publisher was a friend of mine who had a nonfiction imprint. They wanted to do the first fiction imprint, whatever. I took the deal and it did not end well. Never go into business with a friend. I learned that money changes everything. We learned that the hard way. They also didn't know what to do with a fiction book. They were nonfiction. They just didn't know what to do. So during that time, I was doing a podcast. Another publisher found me. They were running the podcast. They were like, we heard about your book. We heard it's great. Why don't you come with us? I didn't have a contract. I did tell them the first one and they were like, yeah, it's fine. I jumped in. The problem is when you've queried and when you've done all this, it's kind of like a wallflower. You'll dance with anybody at that point. You've asked right. enough. Everybody said, no, you'll go with anybody. I went with this one under all of these guises of, we're so transparent. We're going to help you with everything. We're going to market you. All of it was BS. So after being with them for 2.5 years and not getting royalty statements until a year in, and then there was problems with the royalty statements and no marketing, things started taking a turn. I kept asking and it just wasn't sitting right with me. I'd been on the Tamron Hall show. They did nothing with that. Wow. They then changed my covers a month after it. After the Tamron Hall show was like about, hey, she's on her covers. Oh, she did this. They changed it. And every marketing person was like, this is suicide. What are you doing? Things just got worse. They then changed their model and they gave me a choice. You can stay or you can go. The whole time I was there, this publishing company kept saying, you guys are celebrities. You have to start acting like one.
What?
So I sat back and I went, what would a celebrity do? A celebrity would hand this over to lawyers. So I went to my lawyer. I handed them everything. I said, should I stay or should I go? You review it. I don't want to make this decision because I'll make it. I won't make it right. I'll mm-hmm. make it too much with my heart or too emotional. So they came back to me and they went, get the hell out. And I went, okay. So I told them, I'm going to leave. I'm going to take the deal and leave. And from there, it devolved into something I didn't expect. Hmm. And that's when I knew I'd made the right decision. But during my time there, I did not have say, as much say as I thought I did on what I put out.
Wow.
The editors were also authors there in the company.
Oh.
And I kept saying, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Like, is this, you know, because I had my own editor. I have a developmental editor, mm-hmm. Garrett Smith, who's phenomenal. I had a line editor, Christina Frey. They were great. So when I gave you the book, it was done. It was clean. They put it through their editing, which I got charged for. And there would be these debates. It's just supposed to be a line edit over. I have a scene in one of the books where one of the Fae dresses as a demon or glamors herself to be a demon because she's dealing with people. And so I had the eyelid go up just because I thought, that's cool. It's a demon. Like, you know, I don't want them to blink normally. It was a whole debate with this editor over demons don't blink like this. Eyelids don't work. And finally I was like, do you know a demon? Because if you do, we have a whole other issue going on here.
Right.
I'm like, have you gotten that up close with the demon? Because we got to talk here, honey. And it just kept going on about the eyelid. And I'm like, but you misspelled the word the above it. You spelled it T-E-H. You're worried about the demon eyelid, but you missed the spelling above it. And it was things like that where in one of the books, I have a baby swan. It turned into a baby swan is called a gosling. I'm like, okay, you should really call it a gosling. I said, when I hear gosling, I don't know about you, but I think of Ryan Gosling. That's who I think automatically. It takes place in Tudor England. I don't want to take you out of it. So if I say gosling, my head is at Ryan Gosling. I'm already thinking about him. I'm thinking about The Notebook. I'm thinking about every movie that man's done. And it doesn't matter where you are right now, that's who I'm thinking. So I said, I'm not putting that word in. And there were debates like this that kept happening. And I'm like, can you just line edit the book? Just line edit the book. And that's what it turned into that. So when I left after a bit of a struggle, at that point, I had offers from others to say, come with us. We'll do the book any way you want. I'm like, no, I'm going to redo it my way.
Right.
I'm sticking. I'm just going with me. I'm betting on red. Never mind.
Yeah.
I'm doing this my way. I'm going back to the audiobook company that I started with, which was Skyboat Media. I'm releasing them all in audio. And now I'm going to take my time, re-edit them all. Mm-hmm. And then I found mistake after mistake from them. And I'm going to put the chapters back in that they didn't want.
Huh.
And give everybody the book that I wanted to put out always.
Yeah.
Which are these now. Now I can honestly say the third edition of Locked Out of Heaven is what I always wanted. With the prologue, there's a chapter called Destiny, Thy Name is Los, which is about Jarvok's little dragon Los based on my Yorkie Carlos and where he came from.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all the pieces I always wanted, but I wasn't able to. So I'm very happy being self-published. I had to do the work anyway. I never received marketing. So if I'm doing the work, why not get paid when I was only making 15 cents a book?
Wow.
15 cents a book.
Ooh.
And then I had to pay for returns. So if you bought a hardback and decided I'm returning this, which a lot of people do, they read it and return it because they think Amazon's a library. I got charged.
Yeah.
And I got charged $8. I made 15 cents.
Ooh.
You charged me $8 to return it. Do you see where that doesn't match up?
Yeah, there's something seriously wrong with the math there.
Yeah. So we jetted on that. And I have to say, whatever happens now, it's on me. And I'm happier that way. I don't tell anybody not to sign with with a publishing house. All I say is talk to a lawyer who deals in IP and contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Get a friend. I know it's going to cost you money. I totally get it, guys. But really, get a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't look right and they're not willing to make changes, walk.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. I mean, I read a lot of really negative stuff online. I read some stuff through Reezy, and they all basically told me the same thing, that these days with publishing houses being just flooded with people wanting to have them publish their books and all this kind of stuff, that, you know, your chances of getting in were pretty slim. And then, you know, like your story, once you do get in, they trash you really bad. So it's like, why would I even bother?
Here's what it is. They try to make it seem like everybody's trying to get in. And don't get me wrong. There are a lot of people who want to be published, but you're the ones who are paying the publishing company's bills. You're keeping their lights on, not the other way around.
Right.
You are. Without you, they have no content. And that's what gets lost with the authors, because we're made to feel like they can find anybody. There's a million of you out there. Yeah, but without us, you don't have a publishing house. So the balance of power, it's really uneven. We're just made to feel like there's so many of us and we can be replaced. No, because your story is not going to be told the same from anybody else's. Anybody else can say, I'm going to tell his story. Okay, but you're going to write it differently, and he's going to write it differently, and she's going to write it differently.
Right.
So I think the authors in general have to start coming together, because there's no protection for us. There is no union for authors. Yes, there's a writer's union for television, for movies.
Right.
But the authors have no protection. We have no IP protection in that sense. Because in my case, my old publishing house did copyright the books under me. But my books were already copyrighted, because the first one, it was done under me as well. But a lot of times they're not, and they don't know that. If you come out with a movie while you're with one of the big three, well, they get a percentage of that. You get a little one.
Right.
There's all these different things. So I think self-publishing has become bigger. And so the big publishing houses are making you feel like, as the author, there's so many of you. But they know they're feeling the squeeze from self-publishing. And, you know, a lot of people reference 50 Shades of Grey. Was it a well-written book? No. But she's laughing all the way to the bank, and she was self-published. So you could say what you want, but she's laughing. We're not.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot going on in the publishing world that still has to be looked at. And if you're going to query with them, write in, or you want to get in, just remember, even if they reject you, half the times they haven't read it.
Yeah.
They're going strictly by the letter, which is so ridiculous, because you could have a great book and they're going by trends, or they have a slappy going, here, read this. But they've got 50 other stacks and they're just like, I can't, I don't like the synopsis. And they move it on. That's nothing about your writing. That says nothing about you. Go self-publish it. You're going to put the work in anyway. Get the money.
Yeah. That's kind of what I figured out. And I'm not going to change tunes. You know, I'm not chasing that dog at all.
Nope.
You know, it does what it does. I mean, I'm working through Reezy these days.
Reezy is great.
They have a pretty good program going.
Yes.
And I'm going to stick with them. So, you know, that's all good.
I found my typesetter that way, and she's amazing. I found my editor that way. I think they're all great. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really good resource. The only thing you have to do as a self-published author is know you're going to do your own marketing.
Right.
You have to go in knowing that's what you're going to do.
Yep.
You're going to do it nowadays anyway with any publishing house. You're going to do it. You have to pick a social media platform. You don't have to know all of them. Just know one.
Mm-hmm.
Just get with one. And understand you're going to put the work in. That's it. If you know that, it's fine. Don't expect to become the next Game of Thrones. Don't want to be anybody else but yourself.
Nah.
That's it. And be willing to take criticism from the editors. Get a good editor. That's the thing. Get a good editor.
Yeah.
And understand how Amazon works, how KU works. Figure that out.
Right.
What broad distribution on ebook means. Those are the things you have to know. And from there, you'll make it work.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't sold a lot, and I sold a handful, you know, and I advertise wherever I can, far as it goes. I even set up a bookstore on my website, so that, if you didn't want to have to deal with the online stuff from Amazon or Barnes and Noble, you just send me a note. I'll send you a book, you know,
there's a lot of resources like that for it. Like, a friend of mine runs a pop-up bookshop. You know, she goes to Galaxy Cons and takes authors with her. And all the profits go back to the authors. But if you don't want to go, you just send your books. They'll sell it. And that brings you to a whole other audience that you may not have thought whatever gets you. And that's all they do is they just bring indie authors.
Right.
And I have seen indie authors blow up,
huh,
who now have reviews they never thought they'd have, or they're getting picked up on Book Talk and things like that because of this. So there is an indie support system. You just have to find it and be willing, right, to take some of those chances.
Hey, I'm all about that. I'm,
yep,
you know, I've been risking my life all, you know, risking myself all my life. So
what's a,
know,
book to risk?
What's a book? You know, that's nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing.
You know, I did 5 tours in the Middle East.
Then this is nothing.
Yeah, this is nothing.
Try a GalaxyCon. You'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. No. Me and crowds don't get along so well, but that's all right, though.
That's okay. You just send the book. That's the best part. You don't have,
right,
to go. You,
yeah,
send the book, and that's because a lot of authors were introverts. We don't want to go. So,
yeah,
you send the book, and there it is. That's why I think there's a lot to be said for the writing community that is trying to come together, because we do realize that. You,
yeah,
know, it's like, you don't, the big three and those publishing houses that are making you feel like you need them, it's like, well, maybe I don't, but I need the author next to me.
Right.
And they need that, you know, it's about that community more.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, you know what? That's a really good perspective. I mean, it helps me out a little bit more. I learned a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that, whether they're writing books or not, it does open up some eyes on the publishing world. Because, I mean, we've always had this mythology of these big publishing houses being how they are and how they rule the world and so on and so forth. And it's good to know that they're not so good as they thought they are.
We've all had that mythology, trust me.
Yeah.
And I did. But yeah, there's other things, but we'll all make it. It's okay.
Yeah, we will. We will.
We'll find our readers.
Right. So, you know, just for the sake of argument, though, you mentioned a couple of things that I haven't heard of.
Okay.
And you've got my email address. So I'm going to ask you to do me a favor.
Sure.
This stuff with pop-up books and these, mm-hmm, other little,
yes,
things that I didn't know anything about. If you want to shoot me an email with some of that stuff, and I'll reach, I'll do my own reaching out. It's just,
yes,
knowing who they are. I can handle,
oh, yes,
the rest.
I'll send you their Instagram handle. Chelsea Rice is another author. She writes the Realm series. Her and I came up with the idea together and been running it for 2 years at GalaxyCon.
Hmm.
And Brandon Hoy is another fabulous author. Heidi Nickerson. These are all authors that have come together,
uh-huh,
and been selling books there.
Wow.
And yeah. Sometimes they come in person. Sometimes they don't. Cy Harold. They're great authors. They're from all the fantasy to A.K. Ramirez is a murder thriller.
Right. I've heard of him.
And she does phenomenal. She does like a Karen Slaughter kind of thing. But we have all of these artists coming together and helping each other. And I think that's the biggest thing, like with that, in this instance, is that, mm-hmm, none of them know each other,
right,
until they come. And then they were like, oh, and they've all read each other's books.
Huh.
So it's really, really cool. And I can send you the information. They're on Instagram at the Pop-Up Bookshop.
I mean, I've got an Instagram account.
Yeah, it's with 2 P's and an E. But
okay,
they're all over. They're on the GalaxyCon circuit. They travel from, I think the next one's in Columbus, Ohio. Yeah, because,
huh,
they were just in San Jose. And they go on the whole circuit. And that's what they do. And they just bring these indie authors to a new audience. And,
huh,
when we discussed doing it, it was because we were both at the same publishing house at one point. And we were at an event with our books. And we realized we make $1 a book, even though we were working the booth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm here working this booth and I set it up and I'm like, I'm making $1 and I have to compete with 80 other authors.
Right.
So we decided, we were like, you know what, we're going to bring a certain amount and you guys take the profits from it.
Hmm.
Go ahead. You sell your book, you know, but we all have to help each other out. So everybody gets a synopsis of each other's books. You can't stand in front of your own book. You have to work. So it's a whole system and it's been working. I know Brandon, who writes the Teague Wars series, he sells out at every event. He's got 2 books, sells out every single event. It's this dystopian.
Wow.
It's really cool. And if you met Brandon, we met him, I think, at Kentucky in Louisville. Yeah, at an event in Louisville. And at that day, he was like, yeah, I sold a couple. Brandon's got his pitch down perfect now.
Huh.
Sells out, no problem. He's just like, yeah, I got it. It's great.
Wow.
And he sells everybody's books. So it's things like that. And that's where the community really builds. And that's one of the things they all say is, they're here for the community.
Right. Well, that's interesting because these days that's more important than pretty much anything else.
Yes.
Well, that's good. So let's wrap this up just a little bit. So is there anything else you want to tell anybody about what you're doing? Anything you got coming up? I know you mentioned you're going to be doing some work on your books to give them another like an audiobook edition. So, give us some details.
Okay, so the audiobooks are all being binge recorded. So you'll be able to get them one right after another. Kingdom Come is being recorded as we speak, which is the fourth book. But right now, Locked Out of Heaven is finished. My version of Locked Out of Heaven is done. That's available on Audible and wherever you get audiobooks, that's available. Thine Eyes of Mercy, which is book two, that takes place in Tudor, England, Tudor, London. That's available right now, done again by Skyboat Media. From the Ashes, which is book three, and the novella, Fire, Ice, Acid, and Heart, which is kind of like the 3.5 in the series, that half book, that's available together. And that comes out September 24th. So just in a little under 2 weeks from the 11th, about that, I'll give it 12 days. It will be available. And then Kingdom Come comes out October 15th. And then A Fae is Done and Forgive Us will be out subsequently after that, with Danius and Jaden will be attached to Forgive Us, which is the last novella in volume one. So they're all coming out probably before the end of the year, they'll be out. And then volume two, I'm working on right now. In between all of this, the paperbacks will all come out as well. They're being typeset and done. So I'm really excited about everything that's coming out with Birth of the Fae. I have an Oracle card series that coincides with the books because we have an Oracle card reading that happens in the books. So those will be let out at the same time, around that. We're doing that right now. And then I actually have a sports entertainment show on Philly Station AM, WWDB 860 AM radio on Thursdays, called Liberty Bell Smack. Thursdays at 6 p.m. with Mark Mancini and Marianne Costello. We just talk football and entertainment. And then I have my own author show. So if you enjoyed hearing about these stories, you'll be able to catch me on WWDBM 860 Tuesdays starting October 15th at 5:30 p.m. called Once Upon an Author. And that's the stories behind the story behind the author. So I'm going to give you all of this stuff that has happened and why I wrote Locked Out of Heaven and what went into it, the characters inspired by real life people, the pitfalls. And what I like to tell everybody is that because I'm starting over again, you're going to climb the mountain with me. It's not giving you the view from the top like a J.K. Rowling or George R.R. Martin, where you're like, I've made it. Isn't this great? Oh my God, let me tell you about how I struggled. You'll be right alongside climbing the mountain. If I backslide, we're all backsliding together. If I succeed, you're going to succeed with me, and I'm going to give you the truth of what's going on. I'm not going to hide anything. It's going to be transparent.
Well,
I will show royalty statements, all of it.
a lot of people like that stuff these days.
I felt that there was a need for it after I watched a bunch of A&E biographies on authors. And I watched them, and they were all, like I said, talking from their mansion. And they're like, I always knew I was going to make it. I'm like, really? After you signed the $75 million check, you knew you were going to make it? I'd like to know more about that because right now, I don't know. I can honestly say I'm not sure. But the things they left out, I found most interesting. Like George R.R. Martin wrote for the X-Files. He always had his contacts. He also turned down three movie options for Game of Thrones. So that's great that you knew. But you had the connections the whole time. So, of course, you knew you were turning down offers. J.K. Rowling, oh, well, it just came to me. No, you studied the Greek classics, honey, in university. All your monsters are hydras and minotaurs. They're all Greek monsters. Things didn't just come to you. There's little things. Oh, it just became a hit overnight. No, you struggled for a couple years, and then your publisher sent thousands of books out to American libraries for free. There's these little things that Hollywood leaves out. So I just felt like I'm starting from the bottom again. Let's just show you what's going on.
Pull the veil on
Let's
things.
exactly let's show you the underbelly, let you see what's happening and why I got to this point. Like I said, show you the royalty statements from previous publishers that show 15 cents. Here's your return. So people really kind of understand it. And it's not a pity, poor me. It's more of, oh, this is what happens. There's no $10,000 advance. There's no, here's your marketing budget. No, there's none of that. This is it. This is, I had an editor tell me, volume 2, Birth of a Succubus, one editor told me to burn it and start all over again. It was horrible. It was the worst thing they'd ever read. It was horrible. Burn it. She couldn't believe I even wrote it. This whole thing. The next editor, who is a best-selling New York Times author, said, this is your Hollywood moment. It's great. Huh. And I'm staring at both of them going, okay. So it's just the things that have happened. I just want to share because I know there are writers and even just regular people out there trying to change paths.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, here you go. I did it.
Right.
I'm changing. I can't tell you it's going great, but you can come with me and we can see.
Yeah. Sometimes that draws in readers just by doing that.
It's just honesty because I think everybody says they're honest and then you watch a reality show and you're like, this is totally.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Exactly.
When it comes to money, reality. There's no such thing as honesty. Not really.
Yeah. So that's all this is. It's just a matter of, like I said, I'm going to tell you, my best friend screwed me over of 20 years, took my money and ran on the first book. I'll show you the emails if you want. You know, like it's just, here it is.
Right.
Take it or leave it. But if it informs you in some way, we've done our job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Sometimes that's what it's all about. Well, you know what? I want to wish you luck. I truly do.
Thank you.
I think you've got something really great going on. I mean, a little bit more than what I want to do, but still, I would like to get a little bit of it. I'm interested, you know, a lot of things that we talked about today, I'm pretty interested in kind of, I'm not going to do the cosplay. I will tell you straight up. You won't see me doing any costumes, but some of the other stuff though, sounds really interesting. I kind of like to know more, truthfully.
You got it. No problem.
Okay. We'll kind of go from there. Yeah. But if you don't mind, we'll kind of stay in touch a little bit here and there.
I would love it.
You know, your radio, this is a radio station in Philly you talked about, right?
Yes. Yep. WBBN. Okay.
So that'd be interesting to kind of figure out how to tune into that a little bit.
You can actually go right to their website every week. It'll be streamed live and it'll be on Facebook. So yes.
Okay.
Watch it or you can listen to it.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, that works. All right, then. Well, listen, I'm going to say goodbye to you. I really had a really great discussion with you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. I look forward to talking to you again someday. See how you're making out.
Anytime.
Okay. Well, with that, I'll adieu. All right. And we'll talk to you later. So let me close it out.
You got it.
All right. So that was a really interesting hour. I really appreciate Ms. Danielle from showing up and showing the light on a lot of the stuff that we all thought about publishing houses, which obviously are not true. So if you're an aspiring author and you want to write a book, I strongly suggest that you tune into this and maybe kind of rethink what you've been thinking here. I know I did. I learned a little bit last year, but this opened my eyes even more. So it's going to help me out going forward. So with that, I'll say goodbye and I appreciate you coming by and I'll talk to you again next week. Sláinte. While I still have your attention, I want to tell you about how you can support this podcast and my efforts in general. This podcast will continue to remain free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps on my YouTube channel, Krana Biha, and for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Krana Biha, The Tree of Life at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I've set up a donation tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and a donation page on my website at www.kranabiha.com, which are all linked to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Any amount's appreciated. Now, about my website. The easiest way to find it is to copy it from the background behind me if you're watching this video. If you're listening to an audio version, copy the website name from the podcast logo shown. Search for it and enjoy your visit. Lastly, I'm trying to sell some copies of my book, Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found at major book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu. You can also buy from me direct through the bookstore page on my website. Fugitives in the New United States is available in hardcover, paperback, and digital form. Free if you're a Kindle subscriber. It's written for young adults and older, so it's safe. If this were a movie, it'd be rated PG. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite book retailer and enjoy it. If I sell enough, I'll find the time to write the second book in this series. So I want to thank you for your support, even if it's just a like and a subscribe on my social media accounts. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of the Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.